There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the deal we got? I mean, the deal we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, put your knee boots on, put your lacrosse knee boots on, and wade on out into this Thursday edition of Midday Mobile, live local talk over the next couple of hours. We'll keep our eyes on the flash flood warnings. You hear the emergency alerts will take over when they need to, but obviously you know the areas of town that flood. Midtown was at a... I saw some video, a friend of mine sent me some video, and looked like the vehicles were going through... That wasn't just slack water. That was 18 inches of water there in the street. The nice thing about it, and maybe this is just me, it's probably y'all are nice acting folks and don't do stuff like, but I think I put a picture on Twitter a couple weeks ago challenging y'all to guess which parking place was mine here at work because my truck was not in it. You saw the parking place with all the mud and dirt in it, and people are like, oh, that's where he parks. So if you get your truck muddy, these days are the days you can get the free underbody car wash, right? When it does this, you hit the, not fast because you hydroplane and do all this stuff, but you can hit that thing and just get that rinse right under, that freshwater rinse right underneath the, if you have a skid plate or just in the underneath of your truck, it's a nice thing. So take advantage of this mild flooding. But if it's real high, do the, you know, turn around, don't drown. I got to say all that stuff, although I know y'all know better. All right. A lot to do on today's show. Dale Leish from Land Yap is going to join us around 12:30. Robert Kennedy Jr. joins us in the 1 o'clock hour. I got stories, some national stories. Confirmation of what CNN was doing to try to get President Trump out of office. We'll get to that. Not that it's shocking, but it's confirmative, right? Is that a word? Confirm. So we'll get to that story also. The people paying a visit to the blogger or the podcaster who said he was not happy with something that AOC said. We'll get to that too coming up on today's show. But first, and then we'll get into this lottery bill in just a second. I want to point out that hearing Jim McClendon talking with Jeff last hour, go back to something I said yesterday with State Senator Chris Elliott. I think I said it with Cameron Smith. He put something up online about what I had said. And I would challenge all these folks when they said, well, you're going to get to vote on it. You're going to get to vote on it. I am not anti-lottery. I'm not anti-casinos, sports betting. I'm fine with it. I'm anti-BS, okay? So when you tell us that it's competitive now, so, oh, we fixed the problem of it not being competitive in this bill because, look, other entities can come in and bid on these casino locations, but they don't, you know, tell you, well, but then the people, McGregor Legacy Dog Trash or the Porch Panda Creek Indians, have a chance of right to first refusal, so they can bid a dollar more. That's not real competition. Okay, that's not real. So don't, if you want to just say that's what it is, that's fine. But don't try to act like it's real competition, because it's not. And this idea that, oh, well, you're going to get to vote on it, you're going to get to vote on the package that is passed out of the, what's come out of the Senate, goes to the House, and if the governor signs off on it, you'll be able to vote on that. You'll get, it's either yes or no. You'll have a constitutional amendment to change the Constitution to allow for gaming. And then you'll have this language that sets up how it works. Yes, you can vote yes or no on that, but I would argue the nuance of somebody going in to vote and saying, I'm for gaming, I'm for lottery, I'm for roll the dice, casino style, whatever, keno, I'm for whatever, but I'm not for it done this way. But you don't get that. You don't get to make that vote. It's just up or down the package you're given. Do you want it or not? So be clear on that. Something else in Montgomery yesterday. I think we need to get to this because this is going to be – this is the kind of story that they want to keep in the cellar. This is the kind of story they want to keep underground. Scared there'll be eyes on this story. Let me tell you what happened yesterday in Montgomery. So they railroaded a bill again, this time pushing the desires, once again, of special interest. In this case, we the people were not of their concern. No, it was what Big Sweet Potato wanted. Big Sweet Potato in the state of Alabama pushed what they wanted, and what they wanted is what they got. The legislature capitulated to what Big Sweet Potato wanted and made sure it's the official vegetable of Alabama. Did y'all get a say-so in this? Did you get a heads up and enough time to talk to your member of Congress? What if you're somebody who doesn't like sweet potatoes? Right? How do I feel living in a state as not a sweet potato fan? And I would say I'm a minority in my house, but as not a sweet potato fan, how do I feel living in a state that has the official vegetable being the sweet potato? I got no say in that. They don't care what I feel here. I would even say that if they rolled out an RFP on this, it would be rigged. They probably would say, okay, well, state vegetable has to form underground and it has to have sweet. And it's this is a railroad job if I've ever seen one. Came out. The story from Lita Gore, AL.com. The sweet potato, she writes, the versatile veggie you can eat plain but put in a casserole or bake in a pie is poised to get a new title. Don't let me point out that obviously Lita Gore is on the take for Big Sweet Potato. She's paid off. You know, people call all the time, Sean's paid off by these people. Sean's paid off. Okay, I wish. Because I'm going to have to put gas in the boat this summer. So I wish I was paid off by those people. But I'm pretty sure if you look at this, that Lita Gore is in the pocket, in the sack for Big Sweet Potato. So she goes on after talking how great the versatile veggie is, says the Alabama House voted 94-4 yesterday to designate the sweet potato as Alabama's official state vegetable. Let me point out that at least there were four true patriots, Dalton.
Some backbone.
Some people who stand up for Alabama, who would dare defend our rights to maybe not have sweet potato as the state vegetable. Those four people should be celebrated. They are the real patriots. They're the people that stand up. They're not the go along to get along.
No.
There are four people that stood up in the Alabama House and said, no, indeed it won't be the sweet potato.
Yeah, I mean, this is typical slippery slope thing here.
Very much so. Very much so. They said the measure's already passed the Senate, of course. It's heading to Governor Ivey, who we know is all in for Big Sweet Potato. Because she had some presser that came out and said, sweet potato accounts for $9 million of revenue to the state. And produce
everything. They got her into office, if you remember.
It really is. People will think the groups, the big mules in Alabama that put the people in place in our legislature and in the executive branch, Big Sweet Potato is the biggest of the big mules.
Yeah, I mean, they've...
Alpha is a shoot off of Big Sweet Potato.
Yeah, that's how big we're talking here.
Alabama ranks sixth in the country, writes Lita here, in the production of sweet potatoes, with the crop bringing in some $9 million every year, which I would argue that at least a million of that's funneled straight to the campaign to move forward with. You know, okay, 2 million of the 9 million going straight to politicos out there
to
push this in there.
Yeah, so the sweet potato lobbyists are historically some of the toughest in not just Montgomery but D.C. That's what I've heard.
Yeah, Big Sweet Potato exists around the country. Now,
they'll
of course,
wine
they
and
have
dine
to, you. They have to, huh?
They'll wine and dine you to make sure you vote their way.
They do have some challenge with the russet and the Irish gold potatoes and those people out of Idaho. That's, you know, sometimes a bidding war for the votes out there.
Well, I was wondering, you know, like there's different caucuses.
Mm-hmm.
You got the House Freedom Caucus.
Yep.
And this, I mean, they debated this for an hour yesterday at least. So do we have different vegetable caucuses in Montgomery? Do we have like the asparagus caucus, the corn caucus maybe?
Let me talk about how this worked. So we used to have cockeye,
yeah,
for different vegetables. But because Alabama has become a one vegetable state, everything is just insular and done. What Big Sweet Potato wants, Big Sweet Potato gets.
Yeah.
Big Sweet Potato is going to act like there was actually a vote in Montgomery yesterday. That we the people, the voters of Alabama, would have a choice about the state vegetable. But in fact, no. This was already decided.
The illusion of choice.
Exactly.
Yeah.
To make you think, to go through the kabuki theater of maybe we would have different vegetables vying for the official vegetable of the state, when in fact, the fix was in from the word go.
Yeah, it's just what I thought. So, doesn't make it any easier to hear.
No, it makes it hard to swallow.
Yeah,
hard for sure on this. But yeah, so big sweet potato wins, and sweet potato, the official vegetable of the state of Alabama. By the way, too, if you look at some of the list here of official Alabama stuff, you know, which is cool. Mm-hmm. Of course, the yellowhammer, our official state bird. Fighting tarpon, like you see on the Alabama DC Fish and Rodeo sign there.
That's the fish?
Yeah, saltwater fish is the fighting tarpon.
Huh, okay.
So not just tarpon, not till you hook one down there at Navy Cove and he starts tail walking. Yeah. Then at that point, he's a fighting tarpon.
It seems like we talk about red snapper so often now.
Yeah, they are
not.
I'm
a bit surprised.
We used to have, I don't want to take this like I do on the outdoor show, which, by the way, Saturday mornings at 7, Mike Ward and I do a lot on the outdoors. Tarpon fishing used to be
big deal here,
and it still is, but the numbers are not what they were in the olden days. Freshwater fish, largemouth bass, that's good.
Yep.
Game birds, wild turkey. Pecans are the nut of the state. Okay. Wow, we got a lot of nuts.
yeah.
There's a whole bunch here. You got the monarch butterfly as our insect, Alabama red-bellied turtle as our reptile.
Mm-hmm.
Or reptile. What I like is you dig into this, and it's like almost like looking through the specialty license plates for the state, where I think my last count, I think we're at 54 or 55 specialty plates for Alabama.
And climbing.
Yes, and climbing every year. We have an official horseshoe tournament.
No, we don't.
The game of horseshoes, so not the dang beanbag thing, the cornhole. Horseshoes, y'all. Stockton Fall Horseshoe Tournament is the official horseshoe tournament of the state of Alabama.
Well, that's good to know.
Tree, as it should be, is a southern longleaf pine.
That makes sense.
That's good. We have an official soil.
Okay.
The Bama Soil Series, which I've never seen that one in a mock-up there. Wildflower, the oakleaf hydrangea. I'll agree with that. They are fantastic. Red Hill Salamander.
Mm-hmm.
Amphibian from right up in the Red Hills.
That's the state amphibian?
Yes, from Monroe County. So different than the reptile, of course. You know the difference between amphibians and reptiles,
right? Of course. Okay. I just didn't know that we were doing that here.
The fruit, blackberry.
Okay, yeah.
I've seen a bunch of green ones right now, so we're probably a month away from good blackberry picking. Conecuh Ridge, Alabama Fine Whiskey that y'all gave me as a gift here at the station. That's the official spirit of the state. The black bear is the official mammal.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's good. I mean, I like the bears. I figured it would have been a white-tailed deer or something. Tree fruit is the peach. Official crustacean, brown shrimp.
That's the crustacean.
The crustacean. So it's not crawfish, even though we have more crawfish than any other state.
Yeah, that had to be a contentious selection there.
Yeah, well, a big shrimp moved in and did that. So just kind of walking through some of the things that happened yesterday in Montgomery. It wasn't all about the fix being in on the gambling bill. The fix was also in, of course, on the state vegetable. Mm-hmm. With that, I'm telling y'all how it is, and we're rolling on for another edition of Midday Mobile. Glad y'all are here. 343-0106. Dale Leash coming up in about 12 minutes. That man right there, Dalton Orring. We'll be back. Making the proper remedy, because when I hit it, honey's indignant. Said you won't mind, yeah, I guess that's fine. But high is the sky when you're talking about mass. Now, my pa got a friend named Gene. Got me all straight, now my tip won't bend. Now I'm through for the rest of the night, unless I find a piece of pie, whether it's loose or tight.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Yeah, Dalton, I mean, you make a strong point there. Hey, welcome back. It's Midday Mobile, FM Talk 106.5 online, fmtalk1065.com. Remember, check out the website. You can get our podcast a la carte there if there's a specific interview you want to hear. Or better yet, can we use Panoply? Get the Panoply of podcasts available at iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, TuneIn Radio, podcast platform. If it's out there, most likely it's got our podcast out there. And of course, you can stream through the website and check it out right there on your phone or at your desk or whatever. So, and then of course, Facebook, Instagram, which got some cool stuff on Instagram this morning too, and on the Twitter feed. All right. Now, Dalton made the point there that this is all good for sweet potato till sweet potato has its first sex scandal. I hope Dalton, I hope that never happens. I hope that we're not looking at another sex scandal for the state and it's a sweet potato. So Ben says, I know you're automatically against this, Sean, but I think we need big marshmallow and big whip topping to join the big sweet potato. You know, yeah, so Pete's saying the same thing. However, it's determined the big sweet potato could bring the marshmallows. It's a big onion was also had an impassioned plea for their case, and many a tear was shed. I appreciate you, Pete. It was just push right through. Sweet potato. So, and you know, you talk about the putting marshmallows. It's a strange thing. I don't know if it probably bothers no one else. But so you put whipped topping and you know, you can put marshmallows and stuff with your sweet potatoes. But like in the South, we do not like, if I watch somebody putting sugar in the grits, I wince, right? Put some salt in your grits and mash your eggs up in it, but don't put sugar in your grits. But we'll put sugar on the sweet potato. I don't know. Something about that bothers me. What about pecans? That's a state nut. Yeah, we said pecans. Mark says state invertebrate and perhaps national invertebrate, Democrats, and all the other woke folks who have folded to any of the dumb things thrown their way. Speaking of which, it's been discussed some. I'm not saying that we're breaking news here, but it's worth a discussion about this CNN staffer, right? So the story from Fox News, but it's a bunch of different places. It says a staffer for CNN spoke candidly to an undercover journalist about the political motivations the network had during the 2020 presidential election, boasting the left-leaning outlet helped defeat former President Donald Trump, and even calling his own employer propaganda. Okay, so he worked for CNN, calling CNN propaganda. In the first installment of what's billed as a three-part expose CNN, hashtag expose CNN campaign, from the right-wing guerrilla news outlet Project Veritas, network technical director Charles Chester shed a light on how the network wanted to remove its nemesis from the White House and help now President Biden. A quote from this guy said, Chester said in a celebratory tone, look at what we did. We got Trump out. I'm 100% going to say it, and I 100% believe that if it wasn't for CNN, I don't know that Trump would have gotten voted out. So you can go, I'll link the story if you've not seen this. I can link it up on the Twitter feed, but you might have, because you want to hear the audio on this. Goes on to say, in a series of sit-downs with the undercover journalists over the past month, Chester, who bragged he was one step down from a director, they all claim that, claimed CNN was creating a story that questioned Trump's health that we didn't know anything about, calling it propaganda to help remove Trump from office. A quote again here, Trump was, I don't know, like shaking his hand or whatever. So we brought it in like so many medical people to tell the story like it was all speculation that he was like neurologic. So this person says like 15 times in two sentences that he was like neurologically damaged and he was losing it. He's unfit, you know, whatever, end quote. Chester went on to say, we are creating a story that we didn't know anything about, end quote. Couldn't you say that about a lot of the stories that you rolled out in cable news? But just to, there's a lot more to the story, but I mean, it just reinforces what conservatives know, right, about CNN. And that's why I look at this differently, because I can't leave anything be. How much difference did CNN make? I mean, the people that would be voting for President Trump, did they go watch CNN and go, well, I'm not going to vote for Trump now because CNN, they tell the truth. I think this is an interesting story and good for Project Veritas doing this and showing people concrete examples of what often gets discussed. But I'm trying to be real. Did a lot of people that were going to vote for Trump go listen to CNN, go watch CNN and go, oh, well, if CNN says it, then it, you know, to some degree, maybe it has opposite effect. Maybe it helps galvanize. You know, if you have an outlet like CNN doing that and just constantly attacking the president and you're a supporter of former President Trump, wouldn't that make you more apt to go vote? I know. Just leave well enough alone, Sean. Just say what everybody else says, but I can't do that. My buddy Dale Leash, Lanyapmobile.com. He's got lots to talk about with us, and he's on next.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
1235 FM Talk 1065 Midday Mobile on this Friday Eve. Now, a lot of still discussion here from supporters of Big Sweet Potato. At least, you know, you can admit to who you are, and that's fine. But I do want to say that the four in the House, the fantastic four, the fortified four that stood up to Big Sweet Potato in yesterday's Alabama House vote to confirm sweet potatoes, Alabama's official state vegetable. I didn't get a word on that. Those four that stood up, we stand with you. And I hope when they campaign, they're running for office again, they remind folks they were the four that stood up to Big Sweet Potato. All right. Just keeping notes on that. I'll watch this story as it unfolds. Right now, we'll check in on more stories with our buddy Dale Leash, Lanyap, LanyapMobile.com. How are you, man?
I'm reeling from the sweet potato news.
Yeah, what did you think? What is your take as a journalist of note? What was your take on what happened yesterday in Montgomery?
Well, sweet potatoes are disgusting, first of all.
Preach, brother.
So there's that. No, I mean, what about the corn? Corn should be the state vegetable. Corn is where it's at.
You think corn? Big corn?
I'm passionate about big corn, yes.
I think it should be tomatoes. They're a fruit.
Yeah,
they're a fruit. I'll get corrected.
That's true.
They're a fruit. So, but yeah. You know what? So you're saying it's corn. I'm trying to think of favorite Alabama vegetable that would be. How about okra? Why isn't it? Okra would be good.
Yeah.
Or is it a fruit? I don't know.
I'm on board with okra.
Okay. So, and I don't know if that qualifies as a fruit or a vegetable. Probably a fruit. We'll get Bill Finch in on this for the correction.
There's some North Alabama bias going on with the sweet potatoes. I don't like it.
Thank you. And that's how it's always done in Montgomery, Dale. They care not about Southwest Alabama, you know.
Nope.
They just only care about what happens, you know, up there north
Absolutely.
Of Birmingham. All right. Speaking of what goes on down here and what y'all pay attention to at Lanyap. So here we go with you and I talk about certain stories that are chronic. They are like a James Clavell novel miniseries. I mean, they go on and on. And FAA approves downtown commercial airport plan. I thought we had. Didn't we have that, or what? Is it just now gotten signed off by the feds? Does that mean they pay money? What's going on here?
So it is something that the FAA has to approve in order for the FAA to then to later fund the move from regional to downtown. And what they approved was the master plan, the 20-year master plan for the Mobile Airport Authority, which a portion of that 20-year plan would be to move the airport downtown. I think by 2024 was the date I was given. I don't have the story in front of me, and I'm busy now, so I don't all remember everything I wrote. But I think it was 2024. So that's a portion of the 20-year plan. But yes, in order for the FAA and the feds to fund any of this master plan, it had to be approved.
Yeah, it is 2024.
And that's where we're at.
Because I actually have your writing in front of me. It is 2024. So when you say pay for the move, so they don't pay for the structural build out, but what are the cost of a move? I mean, what does the FAA pay for?
Well, okay, so they would pay for a lot of things a lot of upgrades that would need to happen in Brooklyn and things like that. So when I say the move, all I'm talking about is actually getting the infrastructure in place at Brooklyn that would allow for passenger or commercial flights. So, and in some respects, the FAA and the feds can pay up to 90% of the cost. So now there are certain things that the airport authority will have to pay for. But
what about the buildings? I guess is what I'm like. If I picture, here's the new Brooklyn Airport building. Right, you walk in, you get the escalators or whatever. All that. Do they pay for that, or do we pay for that here?
I believe they pay for a portion of that. I don't think it's 90. I don't think it's quite 90%, but they do pay for a portion of that, and the rest would be paid for. My understanding is the rest would be paid for through Mobile Airport Authority funds that they take in for property or hangar rentals and some of the fees that they charge to airlines. Now, that being said, there is going to have to be some sort of public buy-in on this, meaning the county and the city will have to put up some funding or some sort of in-kind service sort of thing to make this happen. But it seems to me that locally the governments are on board with moving the airport, so I don't think that'll be a problem.
Well, we'll have some of that, maybe some of that money we were pledging for Amtrak sitting around, and we can
bring it back to Amtrak, man. We'll see what happens with that too. But yeah, this is something that has been in the works now for a couple of years, I think.
Mm-hmm.
At least since the new iteration of the airport authority has taken shape. And so, it seems like they're going to have to, there was a plan at one point to build two terminals, one for low cost and one for legacy carriers. But considering that we don't have any low cost carriers now, because, you can blame it on the pandemic, you can blame it on airlines shuffling around to
I
different
blame it
airports
on Pensacola.
And others taking those spots, but it may be a situation where we have one terminal and we just use the current terminal we have downtown for something else.
So that's what I was going to ask. So that the terminal that, we'll get to the low-cost carrier thing, because I think you were actually on the air one of the days I had my meltdown when Frontier left after enjoying the ability to load my family of four on a, affordable flight to fly out to Denver, and
right.
I melted down when they left. That structure that we went through there, we've gone through there a couple times, that's not going to be part, that's not where the airport, the terminal is going to sit, right? It's going to be different.
It won't be the main terminal. It
okay.
could be, it could be a second terminal, it seems more likely now that they're going to build a completely new terminal with some of the international capacity that other airports are moving towards now.
International capacity, what? We're going to be flying in from Charles de Gaulle into Mobile Brooklyn Airport.
It could be that it could be charter flights, maybe not through commercial flights, but charter flights. And there could be some other aspects that's what's so fun about the international designation is that, there has to be some segment of it that is international, but it doesn't have to be like JFK or anything like that, but there would be spaces for increased screenings for international customers. Border patrol type stuff. That kind of stuff would have to be. There could be a presence there, whereas at the regional airport right now there isn't.
They just fly one. Cessna 182 Skylane loaded with square groupers in the middle of the night, and then it becomes international, right?
That's absolutely the case. Yeah, it's really a misnomer when you hear about international airports, because it doesn't necessarily mean what we think of traditionally as an international airport. But it does give us the capability to become that if we were so inclined and an airline was so inclined to fly people from London to Mobile.
But, what is interesting to me is that timeline you rolled out, talking to Director Chris Curry, saying 2024. Maybe it's just my age, but that's not long. Years go by very quickly. That's not some kind of pie in the sky idea.
No.
That's something that's pretty close to happening. And so there, to me, there'd be a lot of work that would have to be done between now and then.
I mean, yeah, and there have to be. I mean, we're talking about some land acquisitions. We're talking about obviously building a new terminal from scratch, that sort of thing. It won't be easy, but I think the timeline has always been from approval about 3 years, so they're still right on track with what I think initially we thought it might be 2023, but it turned out to be 2024. So. But it's always been about 3 years, so I think we're right there.
But you write in the story, and you mentioned a second ago, low-cost carriers. You said one issue MAA is dealing with is its inability to lure low-cost carriers to Mobile. One of the advantages of the current downtown terminal was to provide distance between bargain carriers and legacy airlines. So what that it would be like the bargain airport would be Brooklyn, and the big money company expense account would be Farmers, or?
Well, initially when they proposed the downtown terminal that we have now, the temporary terminal, I guess you can call it, The idea was that if everybody was housed at regional all at one place, that Delta and United would dictate the costs and kind of eat the competition because they were in such close proximity that a lot of the low cost carriers, your Frontiers, your JetBlues, your Southwest, weren't interested in being in the same building.
Okay.
So the Mobile Airport Authority built that second terminal. When VIA announced that they were going to come, that was where that kind of idea took off. Because they thought that they could, if they allowed these low-cost carriers in a different location to grab a foothold and kind of be away from the competition a little bit, that they'd be able to then compete better when everybody moved downtown in 3 years. What you're seeing now, though, is that we don't really have, it doesn't seem like we really have the tourism base to warrant to lure some of these low-cost carriers. I mean, and keep in mind, you've got several of them over in Pensacola, which isn't that far away. So we're dealing with that now, too.
I know.
I think it's going to be a situation where we kind of have to let the downtown airport bring in more customers before we'll see any movement on the low-cost carriers. And so it's kind of the opposite now of what they originally thought they could get away with the temporary terminal, but it may still be, there may be some success on that part. Not to mention that the pandemic has hurt everybody in the airline industry, so that has something to do with it as well.
That is for sure. Coming right back, more with Dale Leash from Lanyap, lanyapmobile.com, and body cameras for everybody at MPD, the whole way up the line. We'll talk about that with him when we get back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along. Continue our conversation with Dale Leash from Lanyap, lanyapmobile.com. New issue out in those really eyesore boxes right now, right? If somebody wants to pick one up in person, we're going to talk about how to do it online. But if they don't want to get it delivered, they don't want to look at it online, where do they go?
Just look for the Regal purple boxes all around town. Due to COVID, we've kind of stops going, in and out of the various businesses, the smaller businesses that we were distributing them to. I think we're still in grocery stores and things like that. But your best bet is to look for our boxes. They're purple; you can't miss them.
What if I'm a shut-in? What if I have mass for shut-ins and have a bookmobile come by my house? I don't want to leave my property. What could I do then?
Well, you can get it delivered, or you can get it on. You get the online version where you get all the breaking news plus everything that's in the paper. We even have a digital issue of the paper for folks who don't want to pick one up on our website. It's $1.50 per week, and just go through the website and sign up for it. And then you can be, reading the print version of the paper online. You can also get all the breaking news that comes with it that doesn't make the paper all the time. So we got you covered if you're a shut-in.
There you go. All right. One of the stories they can check out here, too, and this was a couple weeks ago, maybe a week and a half ago, something like I had now I got to get used to saying it, not Chief Batiste, but Public Safety Director Batiste on the show. And we were talking about, a lot of stuff with the violence in the city and law enforcement. And he brought up the fact that there would be body cams for not only the officers on the street, but everybody at MPD. And now now the contract's gone through. You're writing about that.
Yeah. And it's a hefty contract, as you might expect. I think there's 500 sworn officers in the MPD, give or take. I'm not sure of the exact number, but all of them, every sworn officer in the department, including the chief, who's the interim chief right now, will be required to wear a body camera. And this is in large part a kind of a response from the mayor's office and the council to a couple of more recent police-involved shootings that we had. If you recall, there was one where the SWAT team came in and had a firefight with some folks in Westmobile. And they were, at that time, the SWAT team wasn't required to wear body cameras, so we didn't have any body camera footage on that. And then there was also one, I think it was over by one of the interstate on-ramps, where a supervisor fired a shot, and supervisors at that point didn't have to wear body cameras. So this would just take care of all of those loopholes where you know, you've got the argument that they're not wearing body cameras. They will be now. The issue for us, pretty much the issue throughout all of probably the local media, and especially at LANYAP, is when are we going to get to a point where that body camera footage isn't just released when it helps the police department? You know, if it's, you know, and in some respects, I understand that there are ongoing investigations. You don't necessarily want to release the footage, but when it's a highly controversial, you know, police shooting, and there are two sides of the story, and they're being, you know, thrown at everybody, it would be helpful if people in the media could, you know, get that video released, show it to viewers and readers, or describe it to viewers and readers, and have people make a decision based on what the video shows rather than speculation. Okay. And hopefully at some point we'll get to that, because you know, I think Fred Richardson in my story summed up perfectly. You can have as many cameras as you want on police officers, but until they release the footage, they might as well not be wearing cameras.
There you go. And that is something we're going to be talking about going forward. And now with the all the officers with the body cameras, that moves it on to that next discussion. Dale, as always, man, I appreciate our time together. And yep. We'll talk again soon. And you keep it up there, right, for the shut-ins. And keep doing what you're doing for the shut-ins.
Yeah, you know, just keep it comfortable and stay in your house, and we'll take care of you.
There he is, Dale Leash from LANYAP, LANYAPmobile.com. Appreciate him joining us. Also, I want to check in with my buddy Larry Kirby at LCM and talk about inventory and selection of both cars and financing. Hey, Larry.
Good afternoon. I'll start out with something that's really rare. It'd be hard to find another one like it anywhere around. It's a 2003 Mercedes SL500. That's the hardtop convertible with only 50,000 miles.
Oh, wow.
Then we have a 2017 Hyundai Sonata Limited, local one owner with 50,000 miles. I mean, it's got every option you can put on it. And then we also just got in a Nissan Murano Platinum Division, or version, with only 70,000 miles. So we got some great merchandise across the board.
And you also have some great options for us for financing.
Unbelievable financing. Right now it's crazy. I mean, we've been getting some great rates. We got them compete with each other to make the best, lowest rate.
I love it. All right, tell folks who want to come out, check out the inventory, talk financing. How do they find you?
Highway 90 at Plantation Road, online at lcmmotorcars.com. They can like us on Facebook or just call us at 375-0068.
Thanks, Larry.
Thanks.
Larry Kirby checking in from LCM. And we're coming back. Hour number two of Midday Mobile. Robert Kennedy Jr. joins me. We'll talk a couple things on our list. So we'll talk about those and talk with you next hour. I've got still text coming in about this sweet potato thing. We can bring that up. And also, one headline that caught my attention. Well, there's a lot of headlines out there, but something that caught my attention, maybe we'll get into the second half of next hour. Mysterious goat appears in Death Valley National Park. That's bad news, the Rangers say. Goats in the news. I'm not going to miss my opportunity on that.